From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. What does modern-day protest look like? It has its roots in Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement he led 60 years ago. And that model of protest has continued now with demonstrations that reflect the mood of a divided nation. The Black church played an important role organizing those protests. Remember, Dr. King was a 27-year-old pastor when he led the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955. So on this Martin Luther King holiday, we wanted to ask, why is protest still effective? Today's show, Protest's Living Legacy. Reverend Mark Kelly Tyler of Mother Bethel AME Church came in to talk about this with us. So, Reverend Tyler, we're talking about the history of protests in this country, and we do remember Martin Luther King being here to do some protesting in Philadelphia.
My brothers and sisters of the city of Philadelphia.
He protested with the NAACP and Cecil B. Moore when they were picketing to desegregate Girard College in 1965.
I stand at this spot today with mixed emotion.
Can you tell me a little bit about what protests like the ones in the 60s were like?
Yeah, so in many ways, the protests of the 60s were very much like the protests that we're witnessing today. And then in some ways, they were totally different. Today, people go to a protest, you want to wear the most comfortable clothes. But back then, I mean, people dressed for protests a lot of times like they would dress going to church, which is a stark difference to just kind of the way in which the protest, the visual of the protest even looked like. I mean, to think of people in the sweltering heat with a shirt and tie.
Mm-hmm.
Today, no, people would yank that tie off and it would be in the street. But there was a certain decorum that people carried, and they carried that also into the life of the protests. Part of the protest then was also about, in my opinion, the desire to prove that Black people could be respectable, that if Black people could demonstrate to white America that we're deemed worthy enough to be accepted, that maybe the objection to us with busing and housing and schools is because they don't think we're like them. So we want to dress like them, act like them, speak like them, sing like them. In today's world, I think the understanding of many people in the activist community is that, you know, the experiment of Black respectability failed, and that, you know, young Black people are killed in the streets often by police, not because they can't speak the King's English, not because they've not been to school or educated, but just because of the color of their skin. And so there's less of a desire to try to fit in that way. But again, I think that is a big difference in what we witness today and what we witnessed back then.
One thing I'm trying to wrap my head around is how people were able to organize those massive protests back then without our tools. Now we've got social media, cell phones. How did they do it?
Well, there was a sophisticated network in how these protest groups were able to link together. And a part of that was the mystery of the Black church, right? We gather in church meetings all the time. And so there's an established network. And throughout that network, people were able to then transmit other news as well, much like it did during the period of slavery in the Underground Railroad, where the church was used as a vehicle and a tool for disseminating information. So whether we have Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, or none of those, the church has always found a way to help pass along information vital to the survival of Black people.
So, Reverend Tyler, what were some of the other major protests that happened in Philadelphia as part of the civil rights movement?
So when you think about the civil rights movement in Philadelphia, you certainly have to think about the Reverend Leon Sullivan.
I think that there's a hopelessness in the rat-infested dark, dang ghettos of America.
You know, taking on the likes of Tasty Cakes and others in the city that refused at that time to hire Black people. And Leon Sullivan, Reverend Leon Sullivan, really came up with the idea of selective patronage, right? This thought that We are going to only support people that support us. So we're only going to give you our money if you in turn hire our employees and, you know, do better by our community.
But it is a beginning in this direction of economic self-dependence that has to come to my community.
Yeah. So we're going back home, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the environment you grew up in. I know a little bit about it, that environment, because I grew up in Oakland, California as well, during a hotbed of all kinds of protest movement. So tell us a little bit about your personal history as an activist, or what you saw growing up in Oakland, California.
Growing up in Oakland, California, at the time that I grew up, there was no way to get around protest and civil disobedience. Now, literally, I was born in August of 1966 in Oakland, right about the same time, a month or so before the founding of the Black Panther Party, the official founding. So I don't know if there was ever a moment where I kind of thought to become an activist or to be an organizer. It's just something, you know, I'm black. You know, I'm from California. Activism is just also part of what I do. I didn't know there was a switch you turn on or off. It's like, what else do you do?
What kind of activism are you involved in today?
Well, I'm a part of a group known as POWER, Philadelphians Organized to Witness, Empower, and Rebuild. And POWER is an interfaith organizing effort. We're concerned about a number of issues. What we've really drilled down on is criminal justice reform, ending gun violence. We really are big on economic dignity, the idea that people should make a living wage for the work that they do. No one should have to work two or three jobs to put food on the table. If you want to work two or three jobs like me, it should be by choice, because you just are like sick that way. You know, I think some people think that everything is about like just one big massive march. But the idea of protest and demonstration and activism and trying to move an agenda has so many moving parts and so many people that most of the things you never see. It's like, you know, it's kind of like, well, what did POWER do? Well, you don't. I mean, the multiple conversations that we've had, the political pressure we've tried to put on people, everything else. You may only see the march because that's what the media tends to focus on. But trust me, there's been so much other work that's been done leading up to that.
Social media is everywhere. I mean, you can probably organize within a matter of minutes a protest if you have the right network. How has social media changed protesting since the 1960s and in your lifetime?
A part of the amazing advent of social media is that it has given everybody the ability to instantly become a leader. With social media, it's there's going to be a march at City Hall at 12 noon, and nobody even questions who put it out. It's just, hey, you know, there's a rally. Next thing you know, you shared it 100 times. It's been shared from your share. And all of a sudden, people are there. They show up. And it's,
you know what it reminded me of? It reminds me of what happened at the airport
when
President Trump put out that executive order, the travel ban in 2017.
That's the best example of it. So the executive order happens and you've got Councilwoman Helen Gim tweeting out pictures. You've got other people who are tweeting out pictures, and we're sharing, saying, come on, let's get down here. We know this is wrong. We've got to stand with people. And whoop, you know, there we all were marching around at the airport.
No hate, no fear, refugees are welcome here. No hate, no fear, refugees are welcome here.
Now, there is another side to it that is not as healthy, which is that you can't always control who is organizing things. And so you have to be discerning, and you really have to look into the post, try to track it all the way back to the beginning, see who called for it, see who organized it, and check that group out if you don't know them. See what else they've done, and then make a decision as to whether or not you'll go out, because credibility matters.
So we have social media now. Is protest today still effective?
Well, So protest today, like protest yesterday, is not the end in itself. It's a means to an end. And it's only one means, right? And I think that is the problem for so many people who want to criticize and knock protest is, well, protests have never changed anything. And I'm like, oh, really? We would not be talking about police injustice and the shooting of unarmed black people if it were not for protest. Protest is absolutely a part, but it is only one part. You also need to put pressure on political elected officials, the business community. There are multiple aspects to moving a social agenda. Protest is one, and it is still extremely effective.
So today, as we know, is the Martin Luther King Day holiday. What is the best way to make a difference in your community on this day?
Well, let me try to use this as an analogy. So in the life of the church, as important as Easter is and Christmas is as a Christian, I would say that every day ought to be Easter and Christmas, and that you ought to have that same spirit, that same fire alive every day, not just save it for those special moments. And I think it's the same thing about Dr. King. What I would encourage people to do is if you're not a part of something that is about creating social change, that this is a good time to do it. Find places that are doing the work of the legacy of the Civil Rights Movement and Dr. King and participate in that. It's not about a day. It's about how we live our entire lives. But on this day, we do pay special attention and celebrate the life of an incredibly unique and gifted person who is not just a once in a generation person, but I mean, once in probably like a millennia.
Reverend Mark Kelly Tyler, thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
And that's it for the show. The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, under the editorial guidance of Katie Culinary. Eugene San helped edit today's show. Our engineers were Mike Villers and Diana Martinez. Special thanks to KYW for sharing their audio. Tweet us at AnnetteJH, Shai Ben-Yaakov, or Alex Ray Stern, and make sure you download The Why wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.